Translation by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Thereafter a horse named Ucheshrava, which was as white as the moon, was generated. Bali Maharaj desired to possess this horse, and Indra, the king of heaven, did not protest, for he had previously been so advised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Excuse me. So I'll read 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, and then we'll read the purport to number 8. So text number 4. As the next result of the churning, the king of elephants named Airavata was generated. This elephant was white, and with its four tusks it defied the glories of Kailash Mountain, the glorious abode of Lord Shiva. Thereafter, O king, 8 great elephants, which could go in any direction, were generated. They were headed by a Ravana. 8 she-elephants headed by a Brahmu were also generated. Purport, the names of the 8 elephants were a Ravana, Pundarika, Vamana, Kumuda, Anjana, Pushpadanta, Sarvabhauma, Supratika. Text 6. Generated thereafter from the great ocean were the celebrated gems Kaustubha Mani, Padmaraga Mani. Lord Vishnu, to decorate his chest, desired to possess them. Generated next was the Parijata flower, which decorates the celestial planets. O King, as you fulfill the desires of everyone on this planet by fulfilling all ambitions, the Parijata fulfills the desires of everyone. Next there appeared the Apsaras, who are used as prostitutes on the heavenly planets. They were fully decorated with golden ornaments and lockets and were dressed in fine and attractive clothing. The Apsaras move very slowly in an attractive style that bewilders the inhabitants of the heavenly planets. And text number 8. Then there appeared the goddess of fortune, Rama, who is absolutely dedicated to being enjoyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She appeared like electricity, surpassing the lightning that might illuminate a marble mountain. Purport. Shri means opulence. Krishna is the owner of all opulences. Bhoktaram yagyatapasham sarvaloka maheshwaram Suridam sarvabhutanam gnatvamam shantim rachati. This peace formula for the world is given in Bhagavad Gita 5.29. When people know that the Supreme Lord Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the most intimate well-wishing friend of all living entities, peace and prosperity will ensue all over the world. Unfortunately, the conditioned souls being placed into illusion by the external energy of the Lord want to fight one another, and therefore peace is disturbed. The first prerequisite for peace is that all the wealth presented by Shri, the goddess of fortune, be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone should give up his false proprietorship over worldly possession and offer everything to Krishna. This is the teaching of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just when I read that, I remembered a story. Prabhupada says, all the wealth should be offered to Krishna. So once there was one rich industrialist, and he was on a morning walk with Prabhupada. So he was very generous. He was a donor. He was giving. So the devotees gave him the opportunity to meet Srila Prabhupada. So he was on the walk, and the devotees were very happy. He was getting the mercy of a sadhu. And then Prabhupada looked at him and said, so you are earning so much money. How do you earn your money? He said, I have a glass business. So then Prabhupada looked at him and said, so where does the glass come from? He said, glass comes from sand. So where does the sand come from? The sand comes from material nature, is part of material, and who's controlling material nature? That Krishna is controlling material nature. Prabhupada said, yes, so you are just a thief? So the devotees were a little bewildered because they thought, no, but he's giving to Krishna. So the devotees came in, they said, no, Prabhupada, no, he's giving to Krishna. He's giving to Krishna, he's donating. Prabhupada looked at him and he said, okay then you're a small thief. Just a small thief. Another time, another industrialist had come to Prabhupada and he said, Swamiji, I have so many factories, I have so many people working under me, I have so much wealth, but I also have so much anxiety. Prabhupada looked at him and he said, yes, chintam aparimeyam cha pralayantam upashrita asha pasha parama etavat isti nishtata. He quoted the Gita, he said, yes, if you have unlimited desires, you'll have unlimited anxieties. So he said, yes, I have so much things, but I have so much anxieties. Prabhupada said, don't worry, just give it all to us. You'll be happy. We'll be happy, Krishna will be very happy, and like this, everyone can be peaceful. So he said, I'll get back to you. I'll come back to you. Prabhupada said, no, we want to help you. We'll take your number, we'll chase you up, we'll make sure this happens. I don't know whether he actually gave in the end or not, but here we are reading about the churning of the milk ocean. This is perhaps one of the most epic pastimes in the entire Bhagavatam. Sometimes individuals may read this in the Bhagavatam and think, my God, how can we believe such a thing? There is a milk ocean, and then there is a mountain, which is a churning rod. And then there is a huge snake, which is like the, you know, rope in order to turn the rod, in order to churn the milk ocean. And on one side of the snakes is the demons, and on the other side of the snake is the demigods. This seems definitely 100% mythology. People may consider. Of course, we have to admit that our perception is very, very limited. Just like there you have a phone, and 100 years ago, if you would have told someone that you can pick up a plastic instrument, press one button, and speak to someone on the other side of the world within 2 seconds, they would think you're crazy. It's like some fantasy, sci-fi, science fiction. But now we do it without even thinking a second thought. Which just shows that in 100 years, how much our own limits of perception can be turned over upside down. So if within 100 years our perception just proves itself to be so limited, what to speak of incidents that happened thousands of years ago in realms beyond our perception? So, once we were in Soho Temple and Jayadvaita Maharaj was giving a talk and he was explaining how Hanuman jumped from India to Lanka, like from one country to another, a monkey jumped. So he was telling this, and then one, must have been a guest for the first time, he stood up and he said, you don't believe that, do you? You don't believe that, do you? That actually happened. So Jayadvaita Maharaj looked at him and he said, just because you can't do it, doesn't mean it didn't happen. So then this person's ego got a little hit. He said, how do you know? Maybe I can do it. So then Jayadvaita Maharaj said, okay, well, if you can do it, then Hanuman can also do it. He was cornered one way or the other. The Bhagavatam is factual. You see, the accounts of the Bhagavatam work on different levels. They are literal. They actually happened. They're events. This is real life. But they are also ethical. From these stories, not only are they real events, but you can learn many, many lessons. You can learn many, many truths of life. So they are on both levels. It's not that this is just a mythological story that has lessons. No, it's a real story that has lessons. The overall lesson of the churning of the milk ocean is very interesting, because when they began churning the milk ocean, then the first thing is the mountain began to sink. And therefore the Lord had to come as Kurma to steady the mountain. Then the second thing that happened when they began churning is that many, many items came out. We heard of all these different items. However, the third thing that happened is that after many, many wonderful, alluring, amazing items came out, the ultimate item came out, which was the nectar of immortality. So if you think about the churning of the milk ocean, it can also relate to our spiritual life. When we begin practicing spiritual life and we begin churning our heart to try to bring out some love for Krishna, then when we begin churning our heart, the first thing is that we hit many, many problems. When we begin churning our heart, we actually realize many things begin coming out of our heart that we never even knew were there. One time, one person began practicing Krishna consciousness and he said, "My God, since I've started chanting Hare Krishna, I have more lust. I have more greed. I have more envy." So the devotee said to him, No, you had all of those things anyway. Now you're just learning that they're there. So the first thing that happens when you practice spiritual life is that there can be many obstacles, there can be many problems, there can be many issues that come up. But as you continue on with determination, the second thing that comes in spiritual life is you begin to experience many benefits of spiritual life. Some peace, some enjoyment, maybe some fame and recognition. Many, many gifts start coming as you start practicing spiritual life. But if you're wise, if we're wise, then we'll understand that these gifts that come are not the ultimate gift. The ultimate gift is not to get some name, fame, recognition in the movement. The ultimate gift of this movement is not to feel some peace of mind. The ultimate gift of this movement is not that there's just good prasadam, which is nice, but keeps us going. But that's not the ultimate purpose of the movement. These are gifts which come along the way. But for the ultimate gift of this movement, you have to not be diverted and continue on for the real thing. And later on we'll realize that as they began, continued churning past all of these gifts, the real thing came, the nectar. And so in spiritual life, at the end of spiritual life, the real thing comes, which is pure love for Krishna. So many items came out in the interim, a horse, an elephant, apsaras, and now we're hearing that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, also came from the churning. And here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is writing about how Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune and how wealth needs to be dealt with very, very carefully. Because even in the Christian tradition, it's mentioned that money is the root of all evil. In the Bhagavatam first canto, we find the account of Parikshit, who is going around the kingdom trying to ensure that everything is maintained properly. And he comes across the personality of Kali. Kali, who is attacking the cow and the bull. The cow represents earth and the bull represents dharma. So dharma, the bull, has four legs. And Kali is attacking those four legs. So as soon as Parikshit sees that Kali is attacking the bull Dharma, then Parikshit pulls his sword out of the sheath and immediately gets ready to kill Kali. How can you try to destroy Dharma? Then if the four legs of Dharma are gone, then society disintegrates. So as Kali is about to kill, as Parikshit is about to kill Kali, then Kali surrenders. So it's a Kshatriya law that if someone surrenders, you cannot kill them. So Kali says, I've surrendered to you, Parikshit. Therefore, you must give me some place where I can reside. So then the Bhagavatam explains, Abhyartita stada tasmai stanani kalaye dudo dyutam panam striya suna yatra adharmas chaturvidha. Yatra, wherever adharma, irreligion, chaturvidha takes place in four ways, that is the place where Kali resides. So what are those four places where Kali resides? Dyutam. What does dyutam mean?
Gambling.
Gambling. Panam. Intoxication. Striya. Illicit sex. Suna. Meat eating. Where these four activities are, Kali resides. The dark influence of the age comes. Terrible things happen to individuals, to societies. Ignorance creeps in through these four activities. It's said that there are four qualities upon which society is founded, and each one of these activities destroys one of those qualities. Anyone know what are the four qualities through which society is maintained? Anyone want to tell us?
Compassion.
Truthfulness. Austerity. And cleanliness. Yes. So which activity destroys cleanliness? Illicit sexual activity pollutes the body and pollutes the mind ultimately. Which activity destroys mercy? Meat eating. Prabhupada often made the link that if there is indiscriminate animal killing, then there will be war in society. So that's amazing. Prabhupada made that statement. Nobody in the world can make that link. Nobody in the world makes that link. Prabhupada made that link and it makes so much sense. That if you're indiscriminate towards killing an animal, it's just one more step before you're indiscriminate towards killing another human being. Therefore, mercy destroyed. What destroys austerity? Intoxication. Because austerity means that you're able to overcome the urge for an immediate pleasure in order to gain something greater in the future. So what is intoxication all about? Instant pleasure, instant gratification, instant buzz. And therefore, by intoxication, you become so much immersed in a culture of having instant enjoyment that you're not able to have the necessary austerity to experience greater things. And truthfulness is destroyed by
gambling.
Where there is gambling, truthfulness is destroyed. In America, all of you know Las Vegas, right? Has anyone been to Las Vegas? Okay, Mataji has been. I've also been. Not to gamble. Las Vegas is a city in America full of casinos. Everywhere there's a casino, gambling. And there's a smaller version of Las Vegas on the east coast of America called Atlantic City. So you can go there today. A city full of casinos. A city full of gambling. And some years ago, there was a newspaper report that in the hospital in Atlantic City, even the nurses began gambling. And you know what they were gambling on? They were gambling on which patient in the ICU would die first. This is true. And there was a bet which became so intense in the opportunity of what they would win, that in the ICU, as they were betting on which patient would die first, one of the nurses pulled the plug on one of the machines so that she would win the bet. This is the situation going on. Truthfulness. The Bhagavatam mentions that one of these in Kali Yuga, the age we're living in right now, only one of these is remaining. Which of the four is still remaining?
Truthfulness.
Now let me ask you a question. Does it look like a very truthful world to you? Everywhere there are conspiracy theories. Is COVID-19 even true? We won't discuss that today. Is 9/11, was it actually terrorists from the Middle East, or was it Americans who orchestrated it themselves? We don't know. Did man really land on the moon? Prabhupada opened up the opportunity that maybe they didn't. And at that time, it was so bewildering, even for one of his own servants to accept it. However, today, many people believe that the whole thing was a hoax. So now let me ask you a question. In what sense can we say that this society still is standing upon truthfulness? If in the world we see that there are so many lies. But the Bhagavatam says that the only pillar left is truthfulness. So now, you please convince me that society still exists on truthfulness. How would you explain that? Yes, Prabhuji.
You can fool others, but you cannot fool yourself. In deep inside, okay. We know that's not the real purpose to live.
Very good. Good explanation. Prabhuji, Nico?
Yeah,
Nico Prabhu is saying that you can fool others, but you can't fool yourself. So people still have a conscience. They know, okay, I may be lying to others, but deep inside I know, can't lie to yourself.
That's not true. Yoga is very good at lying to
Okay, Nico, looks like that one's even going as well. Anyone else, can you tell me, in what sense can we say that Kali Yuga is still surviving on truthfulness when we see so many lies? Yes, Mataji. Okay, you can say in French and someone can.
Freedom of press.
Sorry, freedom of speech?
Journalism?
To some extent, they can say everything. I mean, in France, at least, you know, it's more or less tolerated.
Okay, so you're saying there's still a freedom to give information through the media. Okay? However, we may question.
Recently, the French government has made it illegal to photograph a police officer's face. You can't photograph a police anymore.
So that's okay, so...
We're on the last leg of truth, and it's going to be cut.
But still, I want you to explain to me, why is it that Kali Yuga is existing on truthfulness? There's a principle given. Yes, bro.
I would say if you compare this four things... according to the level, then truthfulness is
It's not as bad, it's not degraded as much as the others.
Yeah.
Okay? Yes, Prabhu?
Yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yes. This is the point. This is the point. The first verse of the Bhagavatam mentions Janmadya Shayaton Vayad Itaratas Charteshva Bhigyasvarat. Tene brahmaridaya adikavaye muyanti yat suraya. Tejo varimradam yatha vinimayo yatra trisharagomrisha. And then this is the line. Dhamna svena sadani hasta kahakam. Satyam param dhimahi. What is Bhagavatam presenting to the world? Satyam param dhimahi. Even though this entire world is covered over by lies, society still has the opportunity for truthfulness because the Shastra is in society. The Bhagavatam mentions, Krishna svadham upagate dharma gnana dibisaha kalau nasta drisham esha purar narko dhunodita. That in this dark age of Kali, there's only one thing which is giving light. And that one thing which is giving light is the Shastra. And in that sense, we can say that Kali Yuga is still resting upon some level of truthfulness, because in Kali Yuga, by the grace of the Acharyas, there is still access to the Shastra. And therefore, it doesn't matter how much one is illusioned. It doesn't matter how much ignorance pervades. It doesn't matter how much one has become overcome by layers of untruth. If they come in contact with the Shastra, which is the absolute truth, Satyam Param Dhimahi, then all of those layers of untruth can be removed. The day that Shastra disappears from the world is the day that Kali Yuga takes full root. And therefore, the fact that the devotees, firstly Srila Prabhupada provided these books, and then the devotees widely distribute those books and discuss this knowledge and embed it within their heart, means every one of those devotees who is living this knowledge, learning this knowledge, and distributing this knowledge, the full effect of Kali Yuga is only being checked by those devotees. The fact that the books go out is an incredible thing. One time we had Dhananjaya Prabhu, who was the one who, on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, purchased Bhaktivedanta Manor. And once he came into the room and Prabhupada said to him, "It's all over. It's all finished." So he was. Prabhupada looked at him, he said, "It's too late." So he was waiting for the purport. So Prabhupada said, "So many books have been produced, and so many books have been distributed. If tomorrow all of the devotees leave, if tomorrow all of the temples close, if tomorrow ISKCON completely shuts down," he said, "in one sense, it doesn't matter because it's too late. The books are out there. Someone will pick up one of those books and start the whole thing again." Of course, that doesn't mean we want to lose the devotees, doesn't mean we want to shut the temples down, no. We want to keep everything open. However, the books are out there. And the truth is out there. And so it's such an auspicious thing. The Shastra is perhaps our greatest saving grace in our life. Sanatan Goswami had a great love for the Bhagavatam. So what happened is that one day he had a dream. And in the dream, a Brahmin boy came to him and gave him the Bhagavatam. It was not so available at that time. But in the dream, a Brahmin boy came to him and gave him the Bhagavatam. So he was ecstatic. He was overwhelmed. He felt, oh my God, I'm so fortunate. And then he woke up. And then he realized, oh no, it was only a dream. I didn't get the Bhagavatam. I didn't get the book. Oh no, I'm so unfortunate. And he was lamenting. And as he was lamenting, now in real life, a Brahmin boy came to him and gave him the Bhagavatam. And from that day, he received the Bhagavatam and he writes beautiful prayers to the Bhagavatam. He says, Madeka bandho madsangin madguro madmahadana madnishtaraka madbhagya madananda namostute. He prays to the Bhagavatam and he says, the Bhagavatam, Madeka bandhu, my only friend. The Bhagavatam, Matsangin, my constant companion. Madbhagya, my greatest fortune. Madananda, the greatest source of my happiness. Mannishtaraka, the Bhagavatam, that thing which lifts me up. This is the Bhagavatam. It's your constant companion. Everything else in life changes. There's only one constant in this world. And the one constant is that everything changes. Your body changes. The people around you change. The place you live may change. Your life situation may change. Your fortunes may change. Everything is constantly changing in this world. But the only thing that constantly remains with you through all of those changes is the Bhagavatam. And the vision we gain through the Bhagavatam helps us to deal with all of those changes. So, these four pillars, austerity, cleanliness, truthfulness and mercy, these are the four pillars upon which society rests. And therefore those four activities are the four activities we avoid because they destroy those four qualities. But Kali looked at Parikshit Maharaj and he said, you've given me these four places to stay, but your kingdom is so amazing that none of these things are going on. So you promised you'd give me a place to stay. But you've given me four places, so that's very nice, but these four places don't exist. So then Parikshit said, I'll give you a fifth place. And if you stay in this fifth place, then that's okay. Because from this fifth place, all the other four things will happen. And what is the fifth and final place that Parikshit gave Kali to reside? Where gold, money is hoarded, is kept, is stored. Because from that opulence, from that Aishwarya, from that wealth, all the opportunity for all the other sinful activities will come. So I always thought it's quite interesting how we avoid the four regulative principles like very strictly. Very strictly. We even take a vow. I always thought maybe at initiation we should also take a vow to not reside in a place where there is gold. Because if you think about it, that's where the other four come from. However, we may want to consider that when it comes to the fifth place, we may not be as attentive as the other four places. Yet that fifth place, as Prabhupada is saying in this purport, is where it all begins. And so today, as we're learning about the churning of the milk ocean and how Lakshmi Devi came out, Srila Prabhupada is reminding us that Lakshmi Devi is the goddess of fortune. She represents all wealth. And all wealth should be used for Krishna. Because there are two Sanskrit words, dhana and artha. Both of them mean wealth. But dhana just means the physical wealth. But artha means wealth that is used for benefit. Wealth that will actually benefit you and not degrade you. So every devotee will have dhana. But what they need to do is convert their dhana into artha. In other words, wealth that won't degrade you, but wealth that will elevate you. And only when you use the wealth appropriately, only when you use the wealth carefully, only when we're very, very cautious not to become diverted by the contamination that could come with wealth, then that wealth will elevate us. Otherwise, as Prabhupada says, the wealth can be a great source of problems in our life and in society at large. Okay, so I'll pause there and finish and ask if there are any comments, questions or reflections anyone has. Yes, Jyoti.
I'd like to say something very relevant to what you're saying. 25 years ago, I was preaching in Australia and Western Australia, in Perth. So we will go with devotees to Kalgoorlie. Kalgoorlie is a city with an open sky gold mine. They extract gold, open sky. So we will go there to distribute books and paintings. And from this gold, all the sample activities were taking place in the city. Meat eating, and people were all the time drunk. They were drinking alcohol because nothing else to do. It's the middle of the desert.
And you find this actually in all traditions, spiritual traditions, always warning against. Even Jagannath Das Babaji, isn't it? He was being carried in the basket by Bihariji. So one time they were walking and one wealthy person came and he said, oh Sadhuji, I want to give you some donation. So he gave like some paisa, 5-10 paisa, some coins. So Bihariji took it and put it into the basket. Jagannath Das Babaji went and then he came back. He came back to the person and he said, you take these paisa back, it's too heavy. It's too heavy, I can't hold it. So the person was bewildered. He said, what? Jagannath Das Babaji looked at him and he goes, my pranams to you. I don't know how you are carrying so much wealth with you. How are you able to carry so much wealth? Even these few rupees are too heavy for me. He gave it back. It's heavy. It's a burden. I remember when I was growing up, one of my cousins, he became a sannyasi, not in ISKCON, in another movement. And they have 5 vows. I won't go through the whole thing. But one of their vows is that they don't even touch money. Not just like even to touch it. And if by accident they touch money, by accident, they have to fast for one day. Even by accident. I mean, Sankirtan devotees wouldn't be alive today if that was the case. Of course, when there was one yogi in the paper who was like, there was a picture of him and there was a bunch of money and he was like this. No, no, no. So they showed it to Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, you take a picture of me and I'll go like this. Prabhupada could digest it somehow or other. Apparently someone tells another story of Prabhupada. I just heard it and I never read it myself, but I'll tell you it anyway. Apparently Prabhupada was speaking to a guest and he was answering his questions. So he had some questions and then right in the middle of a conversation a devotee came with a briefcase. So he put it in front of Prabhupada. So Prabhupada is speaking to this new person. So Prabhupada is like just just like 100% open. So like there's a briefcase, he's having a conversation, Prabhupada, boom, boom, briefcase opens. And it's full of money. So like, would you do that in front of a new guest? Maybe we would not do that. Prabhupada did it. And so this person was a little shocked, like, oh my God, like this is a saintly person, like what's he doing with so much money? And then Prabhupada called in one devotee and he said, this is for food for life. And he called in another devotee, this is for this temple. Called in another devotee, this is for the BBT fund. And like this, he called in different devotees and then the whole briefcase was empty. And then he closed it and put it to one side. And this person realized, my God, so much is coming. But it's all going back to Krishna. So, Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagya Muchate. Somehow or other, that's our principle, but it must be exercised with caution. But yes, so thank you for sharing.
I had a question about the Bhagavad Gita because, like, it's the principal books that with giving in the street and selling. And I was wondering why it was so complicated, because especially now for the young generation, why is not something like you are doing right now, just giving like daily life examples and illustrations. It would be like, now that when you talk, I understand way more than when I try to read Bhagavad Gita and I read like Tripit and I'm like, oh, I understand.
So sometimes we may have this doubt that why do we distribute books which sometimes seem philosophically very, very complicated, and why don't we distribute something which is easier language, easier for people to digest? So first thing is we can do that. There's no problem. And we do that. We have many devotees who have written books and we give that out. However, the scriptures, although they're very, very philosophical, the power and the potency of scripture is immeasurable. These books are not understood through the intellect. These books are understood through the heart of an eager listener. Somehow or other, I had the fortune to distribute books over quite some years. And it was very, very interesting that often I would distribute books to very, very intellectual people. And I would think, brilliant questions, brilliant, sharp person. They will definitely appreciate these books. And then I may distribute the books to someone who's very simple, who's hardly educated, who maybe has hardly read a book in their life. And the amazing thing is, sometimes they grasp it and the intellectual person doesn't grasp it. And my conclusion was that these books are not understood simply on the level of intellect. So, yes, the books are complicated, but therefore we have to do many other things to help people understand the books. And therefore, when we distribute books, we try to follow people up and help them and assist them to read the books. But the reason we give out these books is because here in these books, you're not just reading information, but there is a spiritual power. You see, yesterday at lunchtime, I was discussing with Lochanananda Prabhu of Mukunda Maharaj, who was one of Prabhupada's earliest disciples, and he was explaining the first time he went to see Srila Prabhupada at the Bowery. And he said, I sat in Prabhupada's lecture and I didn't understand anything. Hardly I could understand because his accent was too heavy and the philosophy was too high. He said, but I walked away and I was convinced. He said, because in the sound vibration of Prabhupada's voice, there was so much urgency that I felt to myself, this man has something important to tell the world. I don't know what it is, because I didn't understand it. But I'm convinced he has some important information for the world. And therefore he came back. So when you read Prabhupada's books, even though you may not understand the language, the conviction, the realization, the potency of a pure soul is having an effect. And so, so there's a spiritual effect, potency of these books that we may not immediately grasp. And just take your own example. You're saying that you read Bhagavad Gita, but you don't understand it. But you're sitting here. You're sitting here, and you're hearing Bhagavatam. So you may say, I didn't understand it. I didn't grasp all the philosophy. But of course, it's had an effect on your heart. Otherwise, why would you be sitting here? So these books are deeper than we can imagine. They're not just information, but they're transformation. But your point is also true that we should try to make it easily understandable for people. And so, both. You had.
Just to go to what Prabhupada said is the purport that always, you know, belongs to the Lord and always should be given to him first. And just related to the present situation, you know, as you said, you know, where the money is kept, that's the banks.
Banks, yeah.
Bank, yeah. So maybe, you know, we see the present situation where many people are speaking about you know, financial or economical crisis or collapse or whatever like that. You know, that maybe can help to stop this accumulation of money, gold like that. And then you know, the preaching of the Bhagavatam will be more effective.
Yeah. Yeah, so even in the economic collapse of the world, I think every single country is going through a recession, economic difficulties, and banks, as you mentioned. So all of this, Krishna has a plan, somehow or other, the Sankirtan movement has to come, and it's so ethereal, money, isn't it? Prabhupada said, money is such an artificial thing, it's just a piece of paper. That's not wealth. In ancient civilizations, there was no money. There's no currency. You barter goods which actually have value. What is, like, it's funny. We use money just like, okay, it's money. It's such an illusion. And the most amazing thing is that all the money in the world, it doesn't even exist on paper even. Most money in the world is just a number on a screen. It's just a number on a screen. If you count the entire wealth in the world, there's not that much even physical currency. It's just a number on a screen. It's amazing if you think about it. Of course, we'd like to have good numbers on the screen.
It's an illusion. The amount of money in circulation is equal to the amount of the government's debt.
Yeah.
So the sum total of all the money in the world is actually zero. Because all the credit equals all the debt.
Yeah, this is the situation. So, therefore, Bhagavatam says, Andhayatan dherupaniyamanam depi satantyam uridam nibaddha. One blind man leading another blind man, and everyone falls into the well. Cheaters and the cheated. That's the situation. Machi, you have something? Had some question? No.
Yes,
yeah, you had a question. Okay.
Also, I heard that banking also referred to philosophical speculation. Yeah. How is philosophical speculation banking?
So there are two things. There is mental speculation and philosophical speculation. So oftentimes Prabhupada says mental speculation is bad, but philosophical speculation is allowed. So let me just clarify what I mean by that. Speculation means to use one's own mind and intelligence to try to come to a conclusion. So mental speculation means when you're trying to use your mind and intelligence to try to understand something. Philosophical speculation means when you are trying to understand the concept with reference to Shastra and you try to understand it. So I'll give you an example. Like say for example, Krishna says, I am the taste in water. So mental speculation means, is Krishna the taste in water? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. How does that relate to my experience? But philosophical speculation means, no, Shastra says it, but now let me look at other things in the Shastra that can help me to understand how Krishna is the taste in water. So that kind of philosophical speculation where you're trying to understand something according to Shastra is okay. But mental speculation where you're simply using your mind and intelligence to come to a conclusion, this is gambling because it's a waste of time. Gambling basically means waste. You give up something very valuable and you get practically nothing in return. So what's the most valuable thing in the world? Chanakya Pandit says, Ayushak shana e kopi na labhya svarna koti bi na chen nirarthakam niti kachaha nistatodhika. Ayushak shana, one moment of time, na labhya svarna koti bi, even if you have thousands of gold coins, you can't buy it back. So mental speculation is a waste of time. You're gambling with time. You're gambling with the most valuable asset that you have. Because at any moment, your time could be up. So, sometimes they do graffiti. Just killing time. The reality is, time is killing you. You're not killing time. Time is killing you. The time, Krishna says, kalosmi, I am time. So when we gamble away our time in something that gives no fruit by speculating, then that's the biggest gambling. And that's why we always refer to Shastra, because anything based on speculation, fruitless. Is that okay?
That's one. That's why Prabhupada says the real wealth is the lands and the cows.
Yeah.
Lands and cows is the real wealth.
Yeah. Yeah, Prabhupada says the real wealth is if you have land and you have cows. Because with land you can grow food, and with cows you can so many. Yes, bro. And the service to the devotees, yeah. Yeah, in another place, Prabhupada explains, there is physical wealth. Higher than that is the wealth of knowledge. Knowledge is a higher wealth than physical wealth. But he says, higher than knowledge is sadhana. That's a higher wealth. Because sadhana, sadhana iti sadhana. That practice which helps you to awaken your eternal wealth is known as sadhana. And then higher than sadhana is prema. That's the Golokera prema dhan harinam sankirtan. That's the highest wealth, one who has love. Different gradations. Higher than physical wealth is knowledge. Higher than knowledge is sadhana. And higher than sadhana is prema. So therefore we pray for prema. Kaviraj Goswami says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, prema dhana vina vyartha daridra jivan das kori vetan more deha prema dhan. Prema dhana vina vyartha. If one man or lady says, I have no love, daridra jivan, then you can understand that person is a very poor soul. So what does Kaviraj Goswami says? Dasakori, Krishna, make me your servant. Dasakori, Vaitan More, and I ask you, when I become your servant, just give me one wealth. Deha Prema Dhan. Give me some love for you. Because then you become wealthy. So that is the real wealth, to have some love for Krishna. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.